June 1992. Antwerp. Water slams into a steel grate in the Groot Shin. A body stops there. Lights hit the surface. Blue tape flutters. Officers lean in. A tattoo peers back through river grit. Black flower. Green leaves. Letters on a forearm. Runic. A name without a face. A life without a file. She left Cardiff in winter and wrote home in spring. After that, silence. Neighbors remember a smile which warmed rooms. Friends remember a woman who chased new streets. The river remembers the rest. Evidence bags fill with a t-shirt from a 1990 gig, dark Adidas trousers with green stripes, walking shoes built for distance. A clock starts which no one hears. It runs for 3 decades. Scenes move fast. A van idles near the bank. A stretch arises. Inside a small lab. A camera clicks over ink lines which once meant love or kinship. Paper logs list times, weather currents. Investigators argue over route maps and tide tables. Calls go out to units across provinces. Nothing comes back with a name. Files age into brown at the edges. Boxes change hands. A case turns into a legend for new recruits. One detail stays loud each time the lid opens. The flower with runic. The forearm which no one forgets. Years pass. Cities change. Families sit with empty chairs. A mother keeps a postcard in a drawer which sticks when pulled. A sibling learns to talk around absence. Europe builds wider bridges for data, but the river's first answer still wins. Ink under skin. A mark which waits for eyes which know. Then a new kind of appeal rolls out across borders. Not a single poster on a single wall. A sweep of faces and marks. A set of cases which refuse to fade. Editors crop the forearm. Officers load a new notice. Somewhere in Britain, a relative stops scrolling. Eyes lock. Breath stalls. Recognition hits like a door slam. The call goes through. A name returns to a woman which water tried to erase. Papers shift from unknown to known. Grief gets a date. Justice gets a path. Our story tracks each step, scene by scene. Antwerp's great. Cardiff's kitchen table. A family room where silence ends. A methods chapter where fingerprints match across oceans in a separate case. While this one turns on ink and memory. We will follow the road which still runs forward. We will ask who did this, who helped, who stayed quiet, and who still holds the missing piece. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave a comment. The next story might change your mind. Don't miss a single turn. June 3, 1992. Antwerp. The Groot Shin pushes hard into a steel grate at Derna near 10 Ecovelii. A patrol light sweeps the surface. A body rests against the metal. Officers step down to the bank. Tape goes up. A diver takes position. A supervisor reads a time from a wristwatch and calls it in. Body content. They pull her free in one slow draw. Water drains from clothing in steady streams. A blanket waits on a stretcher. A photographer moves in and works frame by frame. Each click fixes one detail for the record. The left forearm carries a black flower with green leaves. Letters sit inside the ink line. Runic. The camera takes a close shot, then another with a scale. A gloved hand lifts the wrist for a final angle. The photographer calls the image numbers to the log clerk. Clothing goes up on evidence hooks. A dark t-shirt with Splinter 1990 on the chest. Dark blue Adidas trousers with 3 green stripes. Dark walking shoes, size 40, brand DAG. Each item drops into a clean bag with a label. A pen writes location, date, time, collector, and sequence. The river pushes on without pause. A van door slides shut. Inside, a technician notes surface temperature, wind, cloud cover, and light. A second tech marks the great position on a simple map. The stream bends past a stand of trees, then runs under a road. A stadium-sized venue sits not far off. Sirens fade. Street noise returns in short bursts. A tram bell rings in the distance. At the riverside, officers check the bank for skid marks, drag marks, or recent litter that points to a drop site. Boots probe soil near a concrete lip. A ruler shows depth of a fresh scuff. Bags pick up any loose fibers. A small notebook stores initials for each collector. The team speaks little. Every step moves forward in quiet order. At the morgue intake, a chain of custody line forms. A tag with a case number ties to the stretcher. A second tag links to clothing. Wet items go to a drying room with filters and clean air. A fan hums. A screen shows temperature and humidity. A tech pins trousers at the ankle hem, shoes on a separate line, shirt flat on a mesh frame. A tray catches runoff for later testing. An intake nurse notes estimated age band. 30s by first glance. A pathologist marks height and general build. Time in water appears limited by skin condition and clothing integrity. No algae mat on the shirt. Laces intact. The first pass records wounds visible without full work. Press reports later will note at least one stab wound. Full study will define sequence and number. Back on scene, a detective checks upstream and downstream distances. How far would a body travel before the grate stops movement? The current near the bank moves slower than midstream. A stick test shows drift lines. The detective notes possible entry points and man-made edges which help a body roll in. He circles a footbridge on the map. He circles a rail underpass. He sets an arrow at the grate with a red pen. A second detective asks for a quick weather backfill for the week. Rain 2 nights prior raised flow. A maintenance log from City Works lists grate cleaning 3 days ago. The entry notes removal of branches and a plastic drum. No mention of a person on that date. The grate stands open today. Flow looks normal. In the lab, the flower tattoo becomes a center point. A mapping sheet shows each leaf. Black ink with green fill. No color fade beyond normal wear. The letters sit sharp. Renick. An analyst writes positions in millimeters from wrist crease and elbow. She draws a final rough on graph paper. She writes left forearm, dorsal surface, midline. She circles the R. Evidence staff open the shoe bags. Size 40. Brand DAG. Sols holds small grit which matches riverbank samples. Laces looped, not torn. No foreign hair inside. The trousers go next. 3 green stripes run full length. Pockets empty. No wallet. No receipts. No ticket stubs. The shirt reads Splinter 1990 in bold letters. Cotton weave. Stitching intact. No tear at hem. A black thread clings to the inner collar from prior repair. The tech lifts it with tweezers and seals it in a small envelope. The geography gets a fresh pass. Derna sits east of Antwerp's core. 10 Ecovelii runs near the water. Cyclists pass morning and evening. A sports and concert complex draws crowds on event nights. Foot traffic increases when shows end. The path from venue to river crosses lit areas and a dark cut toward the bank. A patrol route usually sweeps the road above the waterline, not the river edge. The grate traps debris where the channel narrows. Detectives plot movement windows. Night of 2 to June 3 shows fewer pedestrians after midnight. A kitchen at a nearby bar shuts off lights near 1. A bus driver on the late loop reports no unusual stop near the river. A resident 2 blocks away heard a siren near dawn, which matches the call-out. Back at the morgue, intake stretches into the next hour. The pathologist records identifiers which survive water. Scar patterns. Dental work. Ear piercings if present. A technician rolls fingers for prints if ridge detail allows. The team photographs each view. The photographer calls file names to the log clerk. Another clerk types notes into a clean form. A senior investigator reads each line out loud to avoid errors. By mid-morning, the file holds a spine. Case number at top. Location print. Map insert. Clothing sheet. Tattoo sheet. Intake notes. Chain of custody forms. A next step list sits on the final page. Canvas area shops for missing person flyers. Check police indices for recent missing adults who match height and build. Circulate a short note to nearby stations with a single identifying feature set. Do not release tattoo image to public before internal review. A junior detective visits the grate again before lunch. He kneels and runs a gloved hand along the lower bars. No fresh paint scrape. No loose jewelry. A soaked leaf clings to a bolt near the center. He eases it out for completeness and bags it. He walks 10 meters downstream and scans the bank. A torn paper corner hides under grass. No ink on it. Into the bag anyway. The river keeps its pace. Cars pass on the road above and send short shadows across the water. A cyclist slows and looks once at the tape, then rides on. 2 students lean over the bridge rail and speak in low voices. An officer moves them along with a simple wave. In the afternoon, a supervisor orders a quick briefing in a small room near the lab. The team reviews time of first call, arrival, recovery, and transfer. The pathologist reports status and says full findings will follow after proper study. The lead detective asks for a focused search upstream for any sign of entry. He assigns a pair to walk both banks for 1 kilometer. He assigns another pair to check dumpsters near the venue and along 10 ecoveliae. He sets a final pair on door knocks at houses with views of the water. By evening, the file shows steady progress yet no name. The tattoo photograph sits in the first position of the identifier section. The clothing photographs follow in order. The shoe soles fill a final page. The map with the red arrow remains pinned under a magnet on a board. A note under it reads, "Return at dawn for light sweep and drone photos." A single postcard reached home in May 1992. A short message. A familiar name on the closing line. Postmark rubbed at the edge. The month clear. The day hard to read. Body content. Records place her departure in February 1992. Cardiff to Antwerp. Age 31. She left with plans for work and fresh streets. Family expected regular notes. A call here and there. The postcard bridged winter to spring. After that, silence. The card sat on a kitchen table for a week before storage. Someone read it twice each night, then slid it into a clear sleeve. The sleeve went into a drawer with elastic bands and spare keys. Ink held fast under plastic. The paper picked up a faint scent from the wood. A date pencil mark, added later, fixed the month for memory. The move to Antwerp fit a pattern many used in the early 90s. Port Lynx. Short travel time. Rooms in shared flats near tram lines. Cash in hand jobs at bars and venues. City blocks with corner groceries and late lights. None of this proves a thing about her days. It sets context for a life in motion. She wrote in May. She did not write in June. Investigators built a simple timeline. February departure from Cardiff. A spring postcard. No later contact. The team listed possible reasons for silence. New work hours. Misplaced address book. Shift in social circle. Loss of housing. A sudden event. The list stayed neutral. No guesswork outside recorded facts. They noted the postcard as the last confirmed link before death. The card passed to Belgian police years later when identity became known. Before that, authorities in Antwerp had no missing person file tied to her name. The prosecutor's office confirmed no report from 1992 for a woman with her age and origin. The gap shaped the next steps in a quiet way. Without a missing file, the early case in Antwerp ran without a name to search against. The postcard had lived in a drawer, held by family, outside formal systems. A technician scanned the card in high resolution under cool light. No glare. No shadow from the sleeve. Edges aligned to a ruler for scale. The image went to a secure folder with a numeric tag. A second tech logged the physical card into evidence with a new chain of custody entry, then returned the original to family with a receipt and a protective sleeve upgrade. The scan stayed with the file. Language on the card matched home patterns. Simple greetings. A note on weather. A promise to write again soon. No address inside the message. No names of companions. No venue names. No dates for planned visits. The brevity cut both ways. It offered proof of life in May 1992. It offered no leads for Antwerp addresses or regular stops. Investigators in Cardiff reconstructed the days around the card. A walk to the mailbox. A morning run to the post office by the sender. A queue in front of a counter. The quick thud of a date stamp. None of this sits on paper as a fact for this case. It reflects common steps for mail in that month and year. The team refused to add color beyond essentials. The card exists. May exists. The rest stays in the column for unknowns. Family memory added anchor points. The last spoken call fell weeks before the card. Tone upbeat. Plans framed as short-term stays. No mention of fear or conflict. No mention of debt. No medical issues volunteered. No new partner named. These notes entered the file as family recollection, not as verified ledger entries. The lead detective highlighted them in yellow to mark their status. A second pass examined the card stock itself. Surface gloss. Fiber weight. Trace wear at corners. Nothing unique enough to narrow a specific shop. Ink flow steady across lines. No sign of a failing pen. The last line signed with the same curve used in older letters held by family. A handwriting analyst noted strong consistency with prior samples, then stopped at that. The office barred any push into personality reading. The case needed hard points only. Teams in Antwerp tried to map likely living areas for a new arrival in early 1992 with limited funds. City maps from the year helped locate boarding houses near tram corridors. The team marked streets where seasonal workers often found rooms. The marks showed clusters within walking distance of the old core and near the Ring Road. The cluster logic helped shape door knock plans once identity was confirmed decades later. It did not change the early 1992 search, since no one in Antwerp knew a name at the time. The kitchen chair scene stayed in focus for the narrator's line. A simple chair, pulled back half a hand's width from the table. A family member sits, reads, folds the card, and returns it to the sleeve. Empty space collects on the table after the ritual ends. Days pass. The drawer closes. The handle sticks when pulled too hard. A fresh attempt, gentle, and it opens. The card waits. The month on the postmark pins a point that no one can move. Back in the evidence room, the lead detective set a rule for this chapter of the file. No drift into the river scene. No drift into the later appeal. The team would hold the focus on departure, age, the postcard, and the absence of a local missing report in 1992. Every other detail lived in other chapters of the case. The file followed that structure to avoid bleed between sections. A single line from an official summary went into the record here. Investigators stated she left Cardiff for Antwerp in February 1992 and sent a postcard in May. Then contact ended. The tone remained flat and precise. The purpose was to set a public frame without implying motive or state of mind. The map in the room gained two pins. One for Cardiff. One for Antwerp. A string linked them in a straight line that no one pretended reflected a real route. Ferries, trains, coaches, and rides share space in that path. The string existed to keep eyes on two cities that hold the start and the last confirmed message. On the wall below the string, a small page carried her age at departure. 31. A clerk added an action list linked to this chapter. Verify any travel records still available from February 1992. Cross-check with British agencies for border entries in that window. Ask family for any address book pages, even partials. Rescan older letters for recurring phrases that hint at favorite streets or cafes. None of these tasks promise clear returns after years. They still belonged in the plan. Silence needs attempts, even if late. A separate note addressed public communication choices for later stages. No release of postcard text to the public. No scans outside the evidence chain. Respect for family. Focus on identifiers with investigative value. The team locked those rules before the identification went public to prevent a rush to publish personal lines. A meeting in a quiet office set the emotional stakes without drama. The detective spoke to family in clear speech. The move date. The card month. The end of contact. The present plan. The promise to carry forward with respect. A pause followed each set of facts. The listener's breathing set the pace. The card lay on the table, protected by plastic, never touched without gloves. Late in the day, the file manager turned to new staff and explained why this chapter matters. Names fix timelines. A single card stops theory from spreading too wide. The month on the postmark belongs to history now. The work from here uses it as a hinge. Before the card, travel. After the card, no word. Within that window sits the unknown events that lead to the river. A corkboard waits in a small room. Pushpins hold a map, a great photo, and a list of tasks in block print. Phones ring. A fax spits thin paper into a tray. The hunt runs on paper and patience. Body content. The file moves through early 90s process. Forms in triplicate. Signatures in blue ink only. A clerk walks folders from desk to desk. Each handoff takes minutes, which turn into hours. Fingerprints go to a local unit for checks. Technicians ink each finger and roll on a card. Magnifiers sit on a felt pad. Matching means slow eyes over stacks of cards. No shared live index across borders. Results return with no hit. DNA work exists, but reach sits narrow. Lab space runs tight. Reagents cost money. Turnaround drifts into weeks. Cross-border exchange needs paper letters and scheduled calls. Courier bags move evidence lists, not full files. Telephones carry most messages. Officers speak in clear, short lines. Name. Age band. Height. Identifiers. A tattoo on a left forearm with black petals and green leaves. A note on clothing. A request for any missing person who fits. The answers come in pieces over days. No match. Media outreach stays local. A single column in a city paper. a 2-minute segment near the end of a nightly broadcast. Viewers glance and move on. No surge of tips lands on the desk. Maps show travel paths into Antwerp. Rail. Coach. Road. No digital trace for ticket sales. Cash leaves no trail. Lodging for new arrivals often means a room with no formal lease. Names pass from friend to friend. Addresses change with short notice. Door knocks and likely clusters give a few nods, no firm lead. A detective logs each call in a hardbound book. Time in the left column. Recipient in the next. Summary in tight phrases. He adds an asterisk to lines which need follow-up. He returns to those lines each morning, crosses one or two, then adds fresh marks by night. An evidence locker holds the bagged shirt, trousers, and shoes. A single key controls access. The log shows every entry. 2 signatures on each line. A camera records the table during checks. The aim is simple. Keep chain of custody clean for 1 day in court. Inside the lab, a pathologist completes a full workup. Entry and exit for wounds. Sequence where possible. Depth. Angle. Tool class. No tool in hand to compare. Notes go to the file without flourish. The goal is precision with no guesswork. Language for intercity requests stays plain. Unidentified adult female recovered in Antwerp. Age near early 30s. Distinguishing mark on left forearm. Please advise on recent missing adults with similar profile. Replies land as faxes with thin print and noise lines. Staff tape each reply to a board for triage. A liaison officer keeps a folder for cross-border exchange. He tracks names of contacts in nearby countries on a single sheet of paper. When a contact rotates out, he draws a line through the name and adds a new one. No central directory helps him. Reach depends on personal lists and luck. Records from the river area show routine service. Streetlights work. Patrols pass on schedule. No log disturbance near the bank before the first call. A great cleaning report from City Works shows debris removal days earlier. No report of a person during that round. Back in Cardiff. No missing file with her name exists in 1992. Antwerp learns this fact long after discovery. The gap explains a silent start. Without a linked name, early steps in Belgium move without a direct match to a home report. A bridge between two cities stays unbuilt. A senior investigator holds a short briefing for younger staff. He points to the phone, the fax, the corkboard. He places a hand on the logbook. He tells them speed will follow reach, not effort. He says every page must hold up in a courtroom 1 day. He makes eye contact with each person in the room. The room nods. By late summer, the case has a body, a timeline with few hard dates, a tattoo image of high quality and no name. Leads taper. Staff shift to other files, then return in cycles. The box never leaves the shelf for long. Each return brings a small push. Re-ask a contact. Recheck a list. Pin a new note on the board. A quiet policy sets in. Keep emotion out of the paperwork. Keep focus on steps which move the file forward. A millimeter here. A verification there. No leaps. No bright theories without weight. Under lab lights, a forearm rests on a clean support. A scale card sits at the wrist. A color card sits at the elbow. The camera waits. The lens moves in until ink lines fill the frame. Body content. The tattoo shows a black flower with green leaves. Letters run close to the stem. Renick. The apostrophe cuts the string into 2 parts. The lines hold their shape. The green stays inside the leaves with minor blur at the edges. Water exposure has not stripped the pigments. The image reads clean at arm's length and holds under magnification. A technician starts with placement. Left forearm. Dorsal surface. Midline between wrist and elbow. She marks distance from the proximal wrist crease. 81 millimeters to the first petal. 137 to the last leaf tip. She writes these numbers on a form and adds a simple diagram. The camera takes 3 views at 90 degrees to each other. A 4th frame captures the whole forearm for context. Line weight varies across the design. The flower outline measures near half a millimeter in most runs. Stems read a touch thinner. The letters carry slightly thicker strokes on down curves. This suggests a standard machine rather than a hand poke. The letter edges show faint ink spread in the outer dermis, common with wear and age. No fresh scab. No signs of a recent add-on. The work likely predates the month of death by years, not weeks. An analyst notes the letter form. The air has a tight loop that closes near the stem. The end shows a high first stroke and a shallow second. The eye-like tick between them reads as an apostrophe, not a dot. The C curves open and wide. The K leans forward. She sketches each letter on graph paper and aligns them with tick marks to fix spacing. She labels the set as a unique string, then enters it in the identifier index for later text queries. Pigment notes go next. Black reads neutral, with no blue shift under the lights. Green shows toward mid-spectrum. The team notes carbon for the black and a common chromium base for the green as a working assumption. They do not cut skin for pigment chemistry. They work from appearance, which serves for classification and later matching to photographs. Photography follows a strict sequence. Cross-polarized frames to knock down glare. Raked light to bring out ridge and poor texture. Macro at 2 magnifications. A final wide shot with the arm in a neutral position to help future witnesses orient the image. Each file name follows the case number, the body region code, and the frame type. The log clerk calls each name back to the photographer to avoid error. After imaging, the forearm gets a transparent overlay. The analyst traces the design on acetate and marks 4 fixed points. Wrist crease. Elbow crease. A small freckle near the distal edge. A faint scar near the inner border. She writes measurements between each fixed point and the tattoo's anchor lines. This gives a map that can be checked against old photographs where lens distortion might mislead the eye. The team assigns keywords in the tattoo catalog. Flower. Leaves. Script letters. R apostrophe Nick. Left forearm. Mid forearm. Black and green. They add likely reading variants for search. R Nick. R and Nick. R Nick. They do not assign meaning. They keep to strings and shapes. They leave interpretation for later phases when context exists. A short note explains why the image matters. Fingerprints may fail after water time. Teeth help when records exist. DNA helps when reference profiles exist. Tattoos help when eyes remember. The picture can move across borders and trigger recall. It can pass through an office in a city far from the river and pull a person to a phone. An investigator writes a caution under the image. Do not publish full arm in early notices. Crop to the design and a sliver of skin for scale. Hide scars and freckles that do not add value. Keep one detail back for proof of true recognition later. He picks the slight tilt in the apostrophe as the holdback. It angles by a few degrees toward the K. That angle will not be obvious in low copies. It will be clear in person. The file includes a short review of common errors. Ink fades in poor photos and shifts under warm lights. Witnesses sometimes invert left and right when recalling a person across a table. Poses in casual photos can twist a tattoo into a curve. A record of straight-on images and fixed measurements reduces those risks. The analyst adds a checklist to the file. When a tip arrives with a photo, check side, check angle, check lighting, check control points. A cultural note enters next with care. Names can appear in tattoos in many forms. A couple. A nickname. A parent and child. A memorial. The set runic could be read as two names or a short name built from two. It is not proof of any relationship. It is a lead that guides questions. The interview script for future witnesses will ask for the origin of the letters, the date of the work, and the shop. The team lists those questions without answers here. The lab adds a scale comparison. The flower's diameter equals the width of 2 fingers at the center of the forearm. A person who saw it in life might remember that proportion better than a number. The analyst writes an outreach line in plain speech. A black flower with green leaves on the left forearm, about 2 fingers wide, with letters runic along the stem. This line will be useful if a broader notice goes out in a later stage. A separate sheet documents skin state near the ink. Minimal slippage. No large tears over the design. No postmortem changes that block identification. Hair distribution appears light and even. No burn or chemical mark to confuse color. These small conditions support the decision to make the tattoo a primary identifier in the case. The image gets filed with other primary markers. Dental sheet. Height. Clothing list. A repeat of the clothing list does not enter here. The chapter keeps its focus on the ink. The clerk places the tattoo packet at the front of the identifier section. When someone opens the folder, the flower appears first. A briefing brings the team into one room. The lead explains how the tattoo will drive outreach if the case remains without a name. The plan uses layered release. Close partners first. Wider partners next. public release only with a cropped image and controlled language. A person who knows her will not need the whole arm to recognize the design. A stranger does not gain from extra detail. The briefing notes a second path as well. Cross-border notices can include distinguishing marks. Those notices move through secure channels and list marks like this tattoo with exact placement and text. The file includes sample wording. Female adult, left forearm tattoo, black flower with green leaves, letters runic. The notice format exists to help join unknown victims to missing persons in other jurisdictions. It is not a public poster. It is a formal tool for police to compare records. A young detective asks whether to chase shops in Antwerp for records tied to similar designs. The room considers it. Records from early 1992 may not exist or may live on paper in boxes. Shop turnover breaks chains. The lead writes it on the task list with a low-yield note. Still worth a morning. Do it once. Log the results. Move on. The phone checklist for witness calls now includes a tattoo section. Ask for description without hints. Note which arm the person points to on their own body. Ask for size in hand spans or finger widths. Ask for leaf count. Ask whether letters sat inside the design or apart from it. These controls help filter false recall. They also help confirm true memory when a person has seen the arm many times. A small station near the lab holds the acetate overlay, the photo set, and a copy of the measurement sheet. Staff rehearse how to present the images for potential witnesses later. The plan uses a neutral room, soft light, and a single monitor. No leading words. Let the person speak first. Record the exact phrasing. Only then ask clarifying questions. The chapter file closes with a narrow conclusion. The tattoo stands as the most distinctive visual marker in the case. The measurements and the images fix it in a way that can survive copies in time. If this case gets an international notice or a public appeal years later, this image will lead. A gray archive box sits on a steel shelf. A label shows a case number and a year. A clerk runs a finger down a ledger, signs a line, and lifts the box to a cart. The file comes out into light again. Body content. Homicide files do not close without a name and a suspect. This one stayed open across staff changes and policy shifts. Each new lead detective inherited the same core. Recovery at the grate, the tattoo, the clothing, the intake notes. Each one logged a review, checked the storage seals, and wrote a short plan to try next. Evidence rooms changed over time. Paper tags gave way to barcodes. The shirt, trousers, and shoes moved to new racks with climate control. Photos moved from sleeves to optical discs, then to a secure server. Each migration kept the old copies. Chain of custody logs grew long. A supervisor audited the logs each year and signed off on the set. The aim was simple. Nothing gets lost. Nothing gets swapped. If answers appear later, evidence meets them intact. Cold case checks followed a pattern. Pull the box. Read the first intake. Scan the map. Study the tattoo again in print and on screen. Reskim early witness notes for misread lines. Call a few names still in service from the first months. Many calls ended with new numbers or retired staff. A few yielded short memories. None named her. Forensic tools shifted. DNA profiling expanded. Shared indexes grew. This case waited on a reference profile from a known relative. None sat on file. Staff flagged the case for a hit if a family sample entered a system in the future. The flag waited in silence. Detectives tested small outreach steps at intervals. A local article. A brief segment near the end of a broadcast. The crop tattoo image stayed in the drawer. The office chose to hold that back for a wider push which did not yet exist. Tips from limited notices listed guesses and distant lookalikes. Nothing fit height, age, and forearm mark together. Time and water shaped the limits at the start. The first team read the body with care and recorded wounds. The file held those measurements. They remained stable across reviews. Years did not change the math. The river scene held a narrow set of entry possibilities. The walk paths near the bank stayed the same. Maintenance logs continued on a cycle. Staff added each new great service note to the file as routine context. Ownership of the file moved from general duty to a unit with cold cases. That shift brought structure. A database entry tracked review dates, assigned staff, and pending tasks. The case gained a slot on a quarterly list. On that schedule, a detective opened the box and checked off a four-point plan. Verify storage seals. Confirm photo integrity. rerun any new index that fits. Revisit one old lead with fresh eyes. The plan kept the file moving even when nothing obvious surfaced. Period images of the river area entered the file. Each year or two, a pair walked both banks, shot a daylight set, then a low light set. Those images helped new staff see sight lines and access points. They also kept the venue and road context current. The grate looked the same. The water still pressed into metal with steady force. A family contact point sat in the file as a placeholder. For years it held an empty line. Staff knew a loss existed somewhere, but no name tied that loss to this case. The absence shaped tone inside the unit. Briefings stayed tight. Notes avoided theory. The file held facts, tasks, and measured language only. Managers faced purge decisions for lesser files at intervals. Property crimes without suspects reached disposal thresholds. This case never approached that line. Homicide evidence remained under long retention, with extensions signed when needed. The items linked to the body stayed in place. The tattoo photos held their clarity under proper storage. The file did not thin. New detectives brought fresh habits. One built a small card index of distinguishing marks from unidentified cases in the region. Another wrote a script to standardize phone inquiries with outlying stations. A third drew a clean diagram of the grate zone and marked current lines at different flow rates. These small additions did not break the case. They made the record sharper. A lab manager audited fragile items every few years. She checked the mesh frame that once held the drying shirt. She reviewed records for humidity and temperature in the drying room on intake day. She confirmed the transfer to sealed storage. She wrote that no mold growth or insect damage touched the clothing. Her reports read brief and strict. The goal was to make sure future tests would meet court standards if a suspect emerged. Occasional tips still reached the desk. A traveler thought the tattoo matched a person seen years later. A neighbor thought the clothing reminded him of a woman from a different city. A bartender recalled a customer with a flower on her arm. Staff logged each call, asked control questions from the checklist, and filed the result. No call joined all key points. A senior investigator kept a summary sheet clipped to the front cover. It listed the minimum a true lead must meet. Age in early 30s in spring 1992. Move or presence in Antwerp that year. Left forearm black flower with green leaves with the letters RNIC set close to the stem. Height in the recorded band. Clothing or lifestyle that fits the general profile of the period. Leads that failed on the tattoo or the year went to a secondary folder. The team saved time by using that filter. At training sessions, instructors used the case to teach discipline. They showed how to assign details to sections and avoid bleed. Discovery lived in one pocket. Identification materials lived in another. Outreach plans lived in a third. They warned new staff not to repeat background across memos. Each memo should add something new. The structure preserved clarity when files pass from one generation to the next. Across the years, the room around the file changed. Phones shifted from cords to handsets to screens. Fax machines left. Secure email took over some of the flow. The corkboard gave way to a shared case board on a server. The quiet of late nights stayed the same. The hum in the evidence room stayed the same. The grate still caught what the river pushed into it. A unit head wrote a private line at the bottom of one audit. Keep the door open for an international route. The case needs reach wider than one city. The line did not point to a program by name. It planted a direction. The box went back on the shelf with that line at the front of the packet. By the early 2020s, staff knew the audience for a true push would not be a single neighborhood. The mark on the forearm and the move across borders set the scale. A plan began to form for a release that treated the tattoo as the spear point. It would need partners and a channel strong enough to cross languages and police systems. The unit waited for the right frame. The file stayed ready for that day. May 2023. A small room fills with screens. Case tiles stack in a grid. Editors set a crop around a forearm. The flower sits centered. The letters sit sharp. RNIC. A cursor blinks over a line that will ask the public for help. Body content. Belgian, Dutch, and German police join an international partner and build one push with one aim. Give names back to unidentified women. They call the project Identify Me. The plan treats marks and clothing as leads. It treats the public as a force that can move a stalled file. The team sets rules for release. Use clean images. Hold one detail back. Use plain language. Never guess at the meaning of ink or initials. The packet for each case lists height, age band, date, place, and a precise marker that memory can catch. For this file, that marker is the flower with letters on the left forearm. A design lead builds the tile. No full arm. No face. No scars that do not help. The crop shows the flower and a thin border of skin. It sits on a neutral ground with the date and city below. The line reads like a road sign. Not a poster. Not a story. A fact you can carry to your own memory. A translation team prepares text in multiple languages. Copy checks remove words that color the case. The tone stays steady across versions. The page for the project goes live with a set of cases. Each one has a short sheet. Each sheet has a channel to send tips. Officers link their own national pages to the same effort. A press office schedules a briefing. Cameras roll. The river case joins the list. In a call room, phones light. An online form starts to fill. Staff move into a triage rhythm. They tag tips by case number and country. They separate general sympathy from useful detail. They mark the few that include a photo, a name, or a clear memory. They write short summaries and route those to case officers. A clock on the wall tracks intake by hour. The Antwerp unit watches from their own room. The tile with the flower appears on a screen. A detective who once argued for that crop sits back in his chair. The plan he wrote in notes years ago now stands outside the building. He points at the screen and says nothing. The room understands the line he crossed off the list. The project gives structure as well as reach. Notices move through formal police channels with identifiers that match internal formats. Dates, places, and marks line up. Units that once had to hunt for names to call now receive packets with clear fields and contact points. The effort does not replace local work. It lifts it onto a platform that spans borders. Days pass and the intake builds. A few tips point to a person who left home in early 1992 and went east. Some mention a flower on a left forearm. Staff apply the control questions from the tattoo file. Which arm? Size and fingers. Letters inside or apart from the stem. Leaf count. Most tips falter. A few hold. The project grows over the next year. More countries add cases. The list expands. Some files gain an identification and move from unknown to known. Case owners write quiet lines to families who waited. The central team publishes short notes that a name has been found. Each note reads with restraint. The point is not a headline. The point is a path back to a person. Inside the Antwerp office, the case board changes for the first time in years. A new column appears on the right. Public appeal. Below the header sit three lines. Monitor intake daily, request rapid checks when a tip names a city, prepare for family contact if a strong lead forms. Staff rehearse the steps for a call that says someone knows the flower. The choice to launch a public push also changes the tempo of small tasks. The unit updates the brief for door knocks should a name arrive. They list addresses for likely flats in 1992. They pull old city directories from storage. They draft letters to request work rosters from venues near the river from that spring. The letters will go out the same day a match becomes likely. The draft sits signed and ready. A short internal talk sets expectations. Most tips will not fit. A few will help another country's case, not this one. Staff will keep tone level on the phone, even when a caller speaks in grief or anger. They will write exact words and avoid leading prompts. They will thank each caller and move to the next line. The work will feel slow. The plan demands patience. A second talk covers release discipline. Do not leak images beyond the tile. Do not show full-arm frames in public. Keep the holdback detail in the pocket for proof. If a caller knows that tilt in the apostrophe without a hint, that carries weight. If a caller names the flower and the letters but places the mark on the right arm, ask the control questions and note the answer. Do not correct them. Let the memory stand. In meetings with partners, the Antwerp lead repeats a simple point. This appeal does not solve cases on its own. It invites the one person who can unlock a line to step forward. For this file, that person is someone who looked at a left forearm many times. Someone who knew the letters. Someone who kept a card in a drawer and read it at night. By late in the campaign's first season, the tile with the flower has moved through countless hands. It sits on phones on buses. It sits on screens in kitchens and break rooms. It sits on a table in Britain, in front of someone who once traced the curve of those letters with their eyes. The moment lands with force. Breath stops. A call begins. a living room in Britain. Late light on a coffee table. A phone screen shows a cropped forearm. Black flower. Green leaves. Renick. Breath halts. A call begins. Body content. The tip lands in the intake queue with a high flag. A handler answers on the second ring. Voice steady. Questions from the control sheet go first. Which arm? Left. Size and finger widths. Two across at center. Letters inside or apart from the stem. Inside close. Leaf count. For visible in memory. One more tuck near the stem. Last check. Any detail not in the public tile. The caller pauses, then says the apostrophe tilts toward the K. The handler writes tilt confirmed, hold back satisfied. A supervisor routes the tip to Antwerp within minutes. A short summary rides with it. Family contact in Britain. Prior mail from Antwerp in May 1992. Memory ties to a shared kitchen and a simple chair. A liaison rings a partner unit across the channel and requests support for a next day visit. Morning brings a two-room setup. One room for the family. One for the call team. A screen shows the crop tattoo image and two neutral overlays. No leading words. The relative speaks first. I know this mark. A second voice follows. Left arm. She touched it when she laughed. The handler notes phrasing and rhythm. No prompts. No hints. A plan forms by noon. Travel to Antwerp for a formal process. The liaison books seats and a quiet return. A support officer explains steps with care. View controlled images. Review identifiers beyond the flower. Provide photos and letters from the early 90s. Share known scars, dental work, and any small features a stranger would miss. All voluntary. Nothing leaves without consent. Arrival in Antwerp moves without spectacle. A plain door. A small conference room. Water on a tray. The lead detective opens a folder and rests hands on the table before speaking. He thanks the family for coming. He outlines legal steps in clear lines. Identity requires weight under Belgian law. Memory must meet records. Records must meet measurements. Once complete, a court amends the certificate. The family nods. The tattoo file comes out first. Not the public tile. The full lab set from 1992 under controlled light. The acetate overlay with fixed points. The measurement sheet with wrist and elbow marks. No rush. The relative leans forward and names the letters without help. Eyes land on the apostrophe and stay there. The tilt again. The room notes the moment without applause. The detective adds a single tick to a log column. Next, the team moves to secondary identifiers. A small scar near a border. A piercing history. Dental features from a prior visit in Britain. The family provides two clear photos from before the move. One shows a left arm at a kitchen table, flower partly visible near a sleeve. Scale looks right. The overlay sits on the monitor as a check. Distances align. A second staffer reads numbers out loud while a third taps keys. Each value lands in the record. A separate set of images shows clothing recovered on intake day, arranged without commentary. No release beyond this room. The point is not memory of a brand. The point is body size and build. The relative studies the frame and gives a short nod. No words. The team writes match on general build only, not proof. They keep categories clean. Paperwork follows. Statements recorded in exact words. Signatures placed with date and time. A receipt lists items loaned for copying. The originals returned to family on the spot. The lab takes high-resolution scans and prints a small set on archival stock for the file. A clean chain from start to finish. The pathologist steps in for a brief clinical note. Wounds recorded include at least one stab wound. No further detail in this room. The lead holds eye contact and explains privacy and evidence rules. Media lines will remain narrow. The room agrees. Grief sits on the table, but work remains. The liaison outlines next steps. The office prepares a court packet for Antwerp Family Court. Documents include the identification summary, photo comparisons, measurement notes, and the family statements. A judge reviews and, if satisfied, orders the amendment. The certificate moves from unknown woman to a full name. The process takes days, not weeks, once all parts align. A press officer meets the family for 5 minutes. No cameras. No mics. She offers a short message slot and reads two sample lines that protect privacy and honor truth. The family whispers, edits three words, and settles on a sentence under 25 words. The officer thanks them and leaves the room. The family statement reads, "We knew the flower. We never stopped asking. We thank every officer who kept her file open. The unit schedules a private viewing of selected items. Not for spectacle. For a ritual many families request when a name returns. A quiet room. A closed folder. A single photo placed face up for a count of five. Gloves on every hand. The relative looks once and looks away. A staff member returns the photo to the folder and secures the tie. The door closes on a breath that sounds like release and pain in one. After lunch, the team walks the family through the map. Cardiff to Antwerp, marked with a straight string that never claimed to show real travel. The River Grate marked with a red arrow. Bridges. Footpaths. The venue outline near the bank. The string means link, not route. The family nods. They ask how often staff return to the bank. The detective answers with numbers and dates. No promises. Only steps. A brief call goes to the British side. A support officer confirms the family's safe plan home and offers a contact for follow-up care. An advocate provides materials for grief support. No forms with small print. A single sheet with two phone numbers and a time window. The sheet slides into a plain envelope. The Antwerp team moves into a short operational sprint. One group drafts the court packet. One group pulls the original intake negatives for fresh scans on modern equipment. One group drafts a new internal summary with the name at the header. The file view on the case board changes. The left column reads identification complete pending court order. A light next to it turns from amber to green. That evening, a detective stands at the grate for 5 minutes. No tape. No lights. Only water and the hum against steel. He opens a small notebook and writes a line for himself. A name has returned. He closes the book and walks the path he has walked for years. Feet hit the same stones. The air holds the same damp smell. The street above sends down the same quick shadows. 2 days later, the court signs the order. The certificate amends to a full name. A clerk stamps the paper. The detective holds a copy in his hand for a long second before placing it in the file. He phones the family and reads only the result, not the language. He waits through silence on the other end, then says he will call again tomorrow. No rush. The call ends. A short public line goes out that afternoon. Identification confirmed for a woman found in Antwerp in June 1992. Investigation continues. No suspects named. Reporters ask about injuries. The unit confirms at least one stab wound and declines more. They ask for information from anyone who knew her in Antwerp in spring 1992. They keep the line narrow and clear. Behind the scenes, the unit refreshes tasks that waited for this day. Letters to venues near the river, seeking old rosters or diaries from spring 1992. A new round of door knocks along paths marked in red. Requests to partner units for names connected to specific flats from that season. The map wakes up. Pins shift. Lines extend. The family receives copies of the amended paperwork. A detective writes a short note in plain ink and encloses it. He thanks them for trust and for precision. He adds two sentences on next steps and names a single point of contact. The envelope goes out by hand, not bulk. Small respect in a simple act. That night, the unit gathers in a break room for 10 minutes. No speeches. The lead nods at the board. A few words mark the moment without blurring the lines ahead. Identity returns work to the lane of motive, means, and opportunity. The room understands. Coffee cups go into a bin. Chairs scrape back. The hallway lights look brighter than they did the week before. A quiet room in Lyon. A screen shows a digital card. 10 rolled prints. A second screen shows a partial lifted years ago in Spain. Lines rise and fork. A cursor drags a box across a cluster of minutiae. A status bar crawls. One word lands on the screen. Hit. Body content. The method runs on ridges and points. Each finger holds loops, whorls, and arches. Examiners mark ridge endings and bifurcations. A system compares thousands of points in seconds and stacks likely matches by score. Humans still finish the job. Eyes confirm. Hand sign. A black notice moves through secure channels with a case number, date, place, and identifiers. Sometimes that packet carries 10 prints from a morgue. Sometimes it carries latent lifts from tools or tape. Partner units upload reference sets. The central system cross-checks and returns candidates. A hit triggers a controlled path. No names leave the room until an examiner calls it verified. In March 2025, a Spanish cold case gained a match to a set uploaded from Paraguay. Years sat between the lift and the hit. A single ridge path sealed it. The map for that file jumped a continent in one line. The call went out. Two units opened old boxes at once. One life gained a name. One family received a knock that ended a wait no one should face. The work banks on rules built to hold up in court. If a match looks strong, a second examiner repeats the process from zero. No one leans on the first score. If the second examiner agrees, a third step locks storage records and prints a bundle for signatures. Chain of custody lines must read clean from the lift to the report. Every hand signs with time and date. Every transfer uses a log and a seal number. Not every case finds a ridge path to ride. Water eats detail. Time softens edges on skin. Prints smear in fights or vanish in rain. In those files, other anchors rise. Scars. Dental patterns. Genetic links when relatives submit a sample. And tattoos that eyes remember. Rita's case took that road. A cropped image moved across borders. A relative saw letters in a flower and felt shock hit like a door slam. A call turned a number into a name. The methods chapter sits here to keep two truths in view. Fingerprints solve cases across oceans. Public eyes solve others. The system needs both. One story runs on chemistry and code. The other runs on memory and love. Inside the Antwerp office, a detective who once trained on ridge counting stands over a desk with two files open. On the left, a print packet from a different case, now closed after a cross-border hit. On the right, the tattoo file with acetate overlay. He points to the left folder and says, "Lines on a finger." He points to the right and says, "Lines in ink." He closes both and returns to work on one open question. Who put a body against a grate in June 1992? The fingerprint route still touches this case. If a suspect enters a system in any country and a lift from a related scene exists, a match could tie events to a person. If someone once handled her clothing or bound her hands with tape, a latent might still sit on a bag in storage. The unit runs periodic checks when new tools or indexes come online. No hit yet. The step stays on the quarterly list. Training in 2025 looks different than 1992. New staff learn to move from field to lab with phones set to airplane mode, gloves on from the threshold, and scene logs written in block letters with no abbreviations. They learn to shoot macro frames of prints with scale, then seal cards with tamper tape in front of a body cam. They learn to file digital copies under two separate backups, one offline. Steps that sound small decide whether a match will stand in court years later. The method also needs outreach in clear words. A short explainer lives in the case packet for families and witnesses. It shows a finger and a ridge path. It lists why a print might fail. It lists what helps. Clean surfaces. Quick calls. No wiping. People who live near a scene need simple rules that they can remember under stress. The unit keeps this page free of jargon. When people understand the why, they keep faith during long waits. The 2025 cross-continental hit shifted morale across units that work old files. A message ran through halls from Spain to South America to Brussels and back. Files once seen as silent proved ready to speak if asked the right way on the right day. That message reached Antwerp as well. The lead wrote one line on the board. "Reach wide. Stay exact." The room nodded and returned to phones and screens. Rita's identification by tattoo did more than place a name in a box. It calibrated next steps. With identity fixed, teams can ask about routes she used to reach Antwerp, rooms she rented, jobs she worked, and people who sat at her table. A fingerprint might one day link one of those people to an object or a scene. If that day comes, the file must meet it with clean logs and sealed envelopes that open in front of a camera. A methods chapter risks drift if it turns into a lecture. So the file ties each concept back to a step. Upload ridge data from older lifts again when an index expands. Ask partners to rerun searches when they add new reference sets. Check if a regional unit has new hits that mirror this case by time and method. Request fresh copies of old lift photos in higher resolution for modern tools to read. Each step sits on a list with a due date. At night, the detective who stood by the grate listens to two sounds in the building. The low hum of a server room where files sit on drives in climate control. The higher were of a small scanner that reads old lift cards into clean images. One sound means reach. The other means detail. He writes both words on a pad and draws a box around them. The case needs both in equal measure. Night on the river path. Water presses the grate. A detective looks at dark water and names the gaps out loud. Body content. We do not know where she lived in Antwerp. We do not know who she stayed with. We do not know her job in spring 1992. We do not know her last known route. We do not know who saw her after the postcard. We do not know the exact entry point to the water. The map shows likely spots. A footbridge. A rail underpass. A concrete lip. None carry proof. No witness places her at the bank. No camera holds a frame from that night. We do not know the full sequence of injuries beyond the core facts in the file. The pathologist recorded at least one stab wound. The team will not expand that in public. Tool class stays in the room for now. The reason is simple. True details held back help test future statements. We do not know the person behind the letters on her arm. Renick could mean many things. A couple. A nickname. A friend. A family string. We need a date and a shop. We need a voice that knows the story behind the ink. We do not know which flat doors held her mail. We do not know the bars or venues that knew her by name. We do not know which tram she used on late nights. We do not know who walked her home. What we do know guides the next asks. Prosecutors have stated no indication of sexual assault in their public remarks. The clothing from intake remains secured and logged. The tattoo sits in the file with clear images and measurements. The evidence path holds. The court order fixed her name. Investigators now need points that only people can give. A roommate from early 1992 who remembers a left forearm with a black flower and green leaves. A co-worker who remembers a woman from Cardiff who arrived in February. A neighbor who remembers a laugh from a stairwell. A friend who knows who Nick is. We need routes. Which streets did she use between the shared flats and the center? Which bus or tram felt safest? Which corner shop knew her face? A path across the map can shrink a search from a city to three blocks. A single address from a paper diary can open a line to a doorman or a landlord who remembers rent handed over in cash. We need places by the river. A regular bench. A bar that emptied near midnight. A door that stuck halfway open. Someone who worked event nights at the complex near the bank and swept up after crowds left. A person who saw her step into a taxi with a man who stayed quiet. We need the small things that fix time. A broken watch clasp that a friend helped tape. A canvas bag with a stain in one corner. A jacket patch that drew comments. A habit of carrying a postcard in a book as a bookmark. These details sound small. They split true memory from guesswork when interviews begin. We need a call from anyone who has old photos that show a left forearm at a table. The overlay can test distance from wrist to elbow and the tilt in the apostrophe. That angle is the holdback. It proves a link in one glance. We need staff lists from venues near 10 Ecovelii in spring 1992. Security rosters. Bar shifts. Event dates that pushed crowds onto the paths that lead toward the water. We need names that work those doors. People move on. Memory stays. If you knew her then, the identifier set is simple. Left forearm tattoo of a black flower with green leaves with the letters Runic close to the stem. Dark t-shirt with splinter 1990 in bold type on intake day. Dark blue Adidas trousers with three green stripes. Dark walking shoes, brand DAG size 40. Height and build as recorded in the file for that season. We also need silence to break in one place. Someone knows how a body reached the grate. Someone carried fear home and packed it away. Time does not change what the river did. Time does change what people are willing to say. A private call can move a line that sat still for years. Submission paths exist through official police channels and the project intake form. You will speak to trained staff. Your words will be logged exactly as you say them. If you hold a photo or a letter, staff will guide you through a secure process that returns your original the same day. A quiet intake room waits after dark. A headset rests on a desk. A blank form sits on a screen with fields for time, place, and name. A clock sweeps past the hour. The line is open. Body content. If you knew her in Antwerp in spring 1992, speak now. Use official police channels or the project intake form. Staff are trained. Your words go into a controlled log. You choose your level of contact. You can give a name. You can ask for a call back. You can ask for a written reply. What helps most is precise detail. Tell us how you knew her. Say where you met. Name the month. Fix the time of day. Describe what she wore in a way a friend would recall. Share any small habit that set her apart. The right small thing opens doors that a broad story never will. If you lived or worked near 10 Ecovalli in 1992, list your routine. Tell us which tram you used and when you saw crowds move after events. Say which side streets stayed lit after midnight. Name the shop that kept its door open late. If you remember a woman from Cardiff who arrived in February, tell us what she ordered, where she sat, and who sat with her. If you worked at a venue near the river, staff rosters from spring 1992 matter. Security lists. Bar shifts. Cleaning crews. If you held a diary or a pocket calendar from that season, look again at late May and early June. A single name on a night can cut a search from hundreds to one. If you have a photograph from a flat or a table in 1992 that shows a left forearm, do not post it in public. Call first. Staff will guide you through a secure handoff. Originals return the same day. We will scan with care, match measurements, and protect your property. Hold back the image from social feeds. A controlled process protects truth and keeps proof clean for court. If you fear someone, say so at the start of the call. We will plan contact around your safety. We will not put you in a room with anyone you name. If you need to speak away from your home or job, say where and when. A short meeting in a neutral place works. A scheduled call works. Your safety sits first. If you once heard a story about a woman by the river in 1992, write the words you heard before you call. Exact phrasing helps test what was known then against what the file holds. Do not add polish. Do not adjust for sense. Give the line as it landed in your ear. We match exact words to known facts and holdbacks. If you knew the letters in her tattoo, tell us the story behind them. Do not guess. Say who Nick is or was. Say where the work was done. Say when. Describe the chair, the wall, the music, or the street outside that place. Details from the room where ink met skin anchor memory and time. When you call, a handler will ask control questions. Which arm? How large? How close the letters sit to the stem? You will not hear hints. We need your memory, not ours. If you hold the tilt in the apostrophe without help, say it. If you do not, say what you do remember. Partial truth helps more than confident error. If you once shared a flat with her, we need addresses. Floor level. Door color. Entry code if there was one. Name the landlord if you can. If you knew her work, name the job and the shift. Night or day. Cash or recorded hours. List a coworker. A single contact now can restart a walk through old ledgers. If you drove taxis near the river, list the stands you used in late May and early June. Name the hours you worked. Name the nights of big events. Say whether you dropped a woman with a British voice near a footbridge or a rail underpass. A fragment placed in time still helps. Do not clean or sort old boxes before you look. Dust and dates matter. If you find a note, a card, or a photo, handle edges only. Slide items into a clean envelope. Call. Staff will explain how to pack for a safe pickup or a short drop-in where items stay in your sight. The cross-border effort now reaches partners in multiple countries. Your call in one city reaches the right desk in another. If you moved away, you still help from where you live now. The handler routes your tip to the unit that owns the file in Antwerp and stays with you until the first follow-up lands. When you finish the call, write down the time and the name of the person who handled you. Ask for your case note number. Keep it. If you remember more in 2 days, call again and quote that number. We will attach the new detail to your first note. Order matters in court. Your own notes help us keep the thread. If you once stayed silent, you are not late. Law runs on proof, not pride. A voice on the right night changes the path of a case that waited 3 decades. A call now gives her route, her room, her circle, and her last steps a chance to be known.